Job 36. Elihu also continued and said, "Bear with me a little and I will show you, for I still have something to say on God's behalf." Well, we've shown that not everything he says is actually right. So he's assuming that he's speaking on God's behalf. That's what a lot of people do. They assume that their own gut feelings, their own gut reactions are in fact from God. He says, "I will get my knowledge from afar and will ascribe righteousness to my Maker. For truly my words are not false. One who is perfect in knowledge is with you." Oh, come on. Who is perfect in knowledge? But this Elihu guy says, "I'm perfect in knowledge, and how blessed you are to have me with you." So I think now he starts to really indicate who he is. He spends so much of his speech saying, "Now listen to me. I am this, I am that, I am going to explain it to you." You always get suspicious of people who are like that, who spend a lot of time saying, "Now listen to me, because I am now going to tell you, I'm now going to tell you the truth, and I'm talking on behalf of God. Everyone else is wrong, but I'm right." And you think, "Yeah, yeah, yeah, and what's your message?" And Elihu is one of those people. So he says, "Behold, God is mighty." Yeah, they all accepted that. He's not actually coming out with anything new. God is mighty and doesn't despise anyone. He is mighty in strength of understanding. He doesn't preserve the life of the wicked, but gives to the afflicted their right. Yeah, everyone's in agreement about that, that God does give the afflicted what is right for them. But the question is whether it's in this life, as the friends thought, that the righteous get blessed and the wicked suffer, or whether actually the wicked prosper now and the righteous often suffer, but everything will be sorted out at a future day, the last day. That's the question. And he doesn't engage with that. He says he doesn't withdraw his eyes from the righteous, but with kings on the throne he sets them forever, and they're exalted. If they are bound in fetters and are taken in the cords of afflictions, then he shows them their work and their transgressions, that they've behaved themselves proudly. So, yeah, he is really saying, "Job, you've sinned and you're suffering because you sinned. Fess up and repent." And again, he is ignoring the opening statements that God has made, that the adversary, the Satan, is moving me to destroy Job without cause. He is a just and upright man. And Elihu is not factoring that in. He says, you know, God brings sufferings upon people and he opens their ears to instruction, that is, through those sufferings, and commands that they return from iniquity. If they listen and serve him, they shall spend their days in prosperity and their years in pleasures. But if they don't listen, they shall perish by the sword. They shall die without knowledge. So, yeah, he's saying if you get suffering, it's because you sinned. And the idea is you learn through your suffering, you repent, and then you have a great life forever after. But no, this is not the case. This is not the case because what Job says is true. The righteous often do suffer. And Job was the example of that. And they don't suffer necessarily because they have sinned. And it is the wicked who sometimes prosper in this life. So I'm afraid Elihu is little better really than the friends and what he's coming out with, but he gives all this fanfare about, "I'm coming out with something new." He goes on, "But those who are godless in heart lay up anger. They don't cry for help when he binds them. They die in youth. Their life perishes among the unclean. He delivers the afflicted by their affliction and opens their ear in oppression. Yes, he would have allured you out of distress into a broad place where there is no restriction. That which is set on your table would be full of fatness. But you are full of the judgment of the wicked. Judgment and justice take hold of you. Don't let riches entice you to wrath, neither let the great size of a bribe turn you aside. Would your wealth sustain you in distress, or all the might of your strength? Don't desire the night when people are cut off in their place. Take heed, don't regard iniquity, for you have chosen this rather than affliction." So he is really coming out with the same story that the friends did. They were saying, "Wow, you've suffered, so therefore you've sinned. Wonder what your sin was. Oh, I bet you took bribes. I bet you did things secretly at night. I bet you let your riches lead you into sin. And he's coming out with the same old stuff. He just keeps saying, oh, I'm going to say something new, but it's the same old stuff. Behold, God is exalted in his power. Who is a teacher like him? Who has prescribed his way for him? Or who can say, you have committed unrighteousness? Well, Job wasn't saying that God was unrighteous. Remember that you magnify his work whereof men have sung. All men have looked thereon. Man sees it afar off. Behold, God is great and we don't know him. The number of his years is unsearchable. For he draws up the drops of water which distill in rain from his vapour, which the skies pour down and which drop on man abundantly. And I suggested that we're seeing now the beginnings of a rainstorm that's going to get worse and worse when God finally speaks. Yes, can any understand the spreading of the clouds and the thunderings of his pavilion? Behold, he spreads his light around him. He covers the bottom of the sea, for by these he judges the people. He gives food in abundance. He covers his hands with the lightning and commands it to strike the mark. Its noise tells about him, and the livestock also, concerning the storm that is coming. I suggest there is a literal storm gathering. But he's coming out with what he said before, that God is so great, man is so little. God is so far above man that who knows anything, and what is Job talking about? Well, Job sees God quite differently. He says, what is man that you should be involved with me every moment? He says to God, you know, back off a bit. You're so passionately involved in my life all the time. Whereas Elihu and the friends like to see man as basically unclean and nothing and tiny compared to God. And while that is true, so far as it goes, it is not the complete picture, because the wonder of it all, as we're going to see when God finally speaks, is that this God who is so physically far above us is in fact passionately interested in us and involved with us.